Welcome to Conspiracies and Stuff. It has been a while. In case you forgot, my name is Rob, and with me, as always, the Krampus to my Hanukkah Harry, the Yule log to my Yule goat, and the ghost of Christmas future to my ghost of Christmas past, please welcome my co-host, Gabriel.
Hi, everybody. Hello. It's Gabriel.
Hey there. It's been a while. This is our Christmas special. We're going to take one from the old Brits and do a Christmas episode.
It's the Christmas gift you didn't even know you wanted, but you're going to get anyway.
Yeah, whether you've been good or bad, you're getting this, so take it. I want to start with, we're just going to dive right into it. You know, there is no better place to start than with the biggest conspiracy in the world. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking, of course, about the war on Christmas. Those GD liberals are trying to take Christmas from us. They're trying to kill Christmas. They're trying to take the Christ out of Christmas.
How dare they?
And I'm tired of it, frankly. I am just kidding, of course. I don't believe in that war on Christmas. I was just trying to give Gabriel a little heart attack.
I was wondering where this was going. I was anticipating your tirade about Starbucks cups and such.
Absolutely. No, I do want to start with, you know, one of the most fun parts about the show is that we've talked a lot about family traditions. Mm-hmm. Did you have any maybe weird or unusual Christmas traditions? Like, did your grandmother make you lay down and beat you with, I don't know, like wreaths that had holy water on them?
Well, she did, but that wasn't for Christmas.
No,
I think it was pretty standard stuff. Although I was thinking back to it, I was being a little nostalgic, which I don't tend to do because nostalgia is for chumps. Or at least that's my personal view. I was thinking back to it, all of my Christmas memories, they're really dark. And that's because as a child, I didn't understand the time change. And so it never occurred to me that it would get dark around 4 p.m., right? So in all the Christmas pictures and all of my Christmas memories, it's always dark outside. And that adds like this layer of like gloominess and, you know, I guess all my Christmas memories are just kind of morose because of how dark it was outside.
Literally and figuratively dark, yeah. You mean. Interesting.
Yeah, but aside from that, I mean, I remember them being, you know, really, really pleasant holidays and Nothing special here. How about you?
Nothing specific. I do remember, you know, the whole concept of Santa Claus is such an interesting thing. Like, everyone kind of adds different parts to the story. Like, we had an aunt who would tell us that we had to leave food out for the reindeer, like feed, like seeds and stuff. Like, it was really weird. And then she would leave behind little pellets and tell us that it was reindeer poop.
Oh, that's cute. That's adorable.
I guess. I mean, she's an awful person, so I just think it was a mean trick.
Even mean people can do nice things occasionally.
True, I guess, yeah. We had a neighbor who would tell us that she saw Santa Claus one time, and it was just like this quick little like red blur that came in and out of the house and left the presents, almost like the Flash, I guess, in retrospect.
It was the Flash the entire time.
Although
I do enjoy, and they still do this, I don't know when they started it, but on Christmas Eve on every news station, whenever they broadcast the weather, actually not even when they broadcast the weather, they'll have like these little updates of where Santa Claus is in the sky.
Yeah.
So, yeah, trying to, you know, coax children into bed. I mean, to sleep, I mean. God damn it, that came out terrible.
Yeah, yeah, I've seen those updates before. I mean, even as far back as, like, the late 80s when Christmas Vacation, in that movie, Christmas Vacation, there's a part where Clark says, I saw in the news that they spotted Santa's sleigh somewhere over New York. And then Cousin Eddie says, "Are you serious, Clark?" I love that that aspect of like I've had a complicated relationship with it. Like, I think it's a weird thing that we've created, but also like I think it's nice. I think it's a nice, quaint, fun part of the history. But yeah, I guess let's get into some of the history of Christmas.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you knew anything about the Santa Claus legend.
I've heard little bits and pieces here and there over the years. Like every year, you know, there's Christmas specials on like the History Channel or something. But refresh my memory and maybe the memory of the audience.
Yeah, well, you can't really talk about Santa Claus without talking about good old Saint Nick. Now, who exactly was Saint Nick and who does he think he is now? Okay, so Santa Claus. This legend actually goes back to the 3rd century in Turkey. Although, because of earthquakes and, of course, the amount of time that's passed, there's not a lot of evidence. But the legend is that when St. Nicholas was born, he was so, even as an infant, he was so devoted to being good that he would only partake in his mother's breast milk on Wednesdays and Friday evenings at sundown, because that was the traditional Christian fasting days. And so he was always like this really good, he was a goody two shoes, right? Even as a young boy, probably around the age of 10, a religious leader in their church like heard a voice coming from inside the church that said, the next person that comes in will be your next bishop. And the next person that came in was a 10-year-old Nicholas. So he became the youngest bishop, right? So where does this legend or this trend of gift giving come from? Well, there's two stories associated with St. Nicholas. The first one was that saved is not the right word. He brought back to life 3 boys that were slaughtered by a butcher and then given away as meat. And this was during a really bad famine. I don't know what happened to the butcher. And the boys were most certainly consumed, but he still managed to bring them back to life anyway, which is amazing. And then also, and this is a story about 3 young girls. The young girl, the oldest girl was too old to marry. The middle girl was, I don't know what her deal was, but nobody wanted her. And the 3rd daughter was somebody was interested, but she didn't have a dowry. No dowry was provided. And so the oldest daughter decided that she was going to be sold into slavery, right? She was talking to her father about, you need to sell me into slavery, and with that money, you'll have enough for a dowry for the 2 sisters. And St. Nicholas, we'll say, overheard this. I don't know if he was eavesdropping. I don't know how he heard it, but he did. And decided that that's terrible, and threw a bag of gold coins through the window. And so this whole concept of giving gifts for being good that's how it got its start. And then, of course, St. Nicholas died. And it wasn't until the 9th century that he was officially a saint, and his tomb is said to weep. I'm doing air quotes right now. Said to weep a fluid that has healing properties, and on the 6th of December, people make pilgrimages. I have such trouble with that word. To come see the tomb, and there you have it. That's the legend of Saint Nicholas, and later on in the, I think, 18th. Maybe 17th century, it becomes Santa Claus.
Interesting. I guess that's when he moved to the North Pole.
Yeah, that legend also comes from the 16th century.
Very interesting.
Yeah. But I don't really know anything beyond that. I mean, like, why do we do gingerbread houses? Why do we do Christmas lights? And I heard some crazy shit about candy canes that I don't know is true. I've seen it on a couple of websites, but I still don't buy it. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
That candy canes, that they're actually a J, which stands for Jesus, or Jesus. We don't discriminate. And the white represents purity of Jesus, and the red represents the blood of Christ for his sacrifices, or so I'm told.
Interesting.
That's a word for it, yes.
Yeah. Huh.
I don't buy that.
I'm not sure I buy it either. But, you know, he is our Lord and Savior, and that's what I'm going to believe from now on.
Sure.
You know, a lot of the stuff I would imagine comes from the 20th century commercialism. So, like, Rudolph is the creation of, like, Macy's or something like that. And Frosty the Snowman might be as well. And then, of course, Santa Claus probably really got a lot of formation of what he is now through marketing and campaigns in the 1900s. But one thing I did research was Christmas trees, because I've always found those to be fascinating. The idea that we chop down these trees, drag them into our house, and decorate them is such an odd thing. Like, I always imagine if aliens came to Earth and they just started asking us about why do you do that, why do you do that, or what is this, that idea that we'd have to explain to them all these weird things. The earliest Christmas trees, there's several different origins. I would say that, like, trees have always played kind of a role in our worship, just like the sun has always kind of been worshipped. Trees have always also kind of been worshipped in different parts of Europe. Mm-hmm. Tree worship was common among European pagans. And like many customs, it kind of survived the Christian conversion of Europe.
Yeah.
Scandinavians used to decorate their homes and barns with evergreens for the new year, because it kind of represented nature and the restart of a new year. And then it had a dual purpose. It also scared away the devil and other demons that would, I guess, that decorating your house and your barn with all of these was designed to scare them away. Kind of like the jack-o'-lanterns.
Oh, okay.
It was kind of a symbol.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That must have been so hard living back then and just constantly trying to keep the devil away.
yeah. Well,
I don't do anything to keep the devil away anymore.
If anything, the door is wide open. Come on in.
There was a story that I read about the Renaissance, 16th century Germany. Martin Luther, who's well known in his own right, also has a claim to fame of he was walking through the forest to his home one night, and he stopped to admire the stars twinkling in the night, and they were kind of twinkling around and through the limbs of this tree. And he thought, this is so beautiful. I have to show my family. And rather than bringing them out there, he had someone chop down the tree, bring it to his home, and display it in his home. And to recreate that twinkling of the lights, he put candles all over the tree. This seems so dangerous, but this was a common practice. Like, I guess he was such a well-known figure that other people started imitating this, and it just became a thing. It was something that a lot of people did. They put the candles on, and that was very common until the invention of, like, electricity and then the electric light. And then a few years later, they were able to replace those candles with actual lights on the tree.
Okay. I have a bone to pick with you about that story.
Okay.
You ready to tussle? Okay, so I have a hard time buying that only because I came across a little tidbit about Martin Luther being so, I don't really know. He was such a hard ass when it came to religion. Right. And so he brought Protestantism, to Germany and was very anti-Catholic, which was why he kind of sort of did away with this whole figure of Santa Claus and insisted that if anyone's going to give you gifts, it is the baby Jesus, not teenage or adult Jesus, but baby Jesus specifically. And so I have a, I don't know, there's something about like this idea of him doing something so pagan, like bringing a tree into your home, that seems at odds with the tidbit that I was reading about. I don't know.
I don't think they're mutually exclusive. Like, I think he can have the tree represent Christ and Christmas time and not Santa Claus. I mean, if anything, maybe that fits the story more, because Santa Claus doesn't necessarily, that's a separate story from the tree and from Jesus. So I think the tree is kind of its own separate thing.
I think what we can agree on is that Martin Luther was a very, very busy man.
He was, yeah. He was kicking ass and taking names, yeah, and putting up Christmas trees.
And so, which by the way, because he insisted that in Germany that it wasn't Santa Claus, but it was in fact baby Jesus, baby Christ, that was delivering gifts. In German, it's Christkinder, which over the centuries transformed into Kris Kringle.
Hmm.
Yeah. Which, because I was like, wait, if he's Saint Nicholas, if Santa Claus is Saint Nicholas, then who the hell is Kris Kringle? Which I had heard that name before as well.
And it's kind of like how Puff Daddy went by P. Diddy and Diddy, Sean Combs.
No. Well, yeah, kind of, sort of. No, actually.
It's exactly like that, sounds like.
Well, so Christkinder was, in order to have celebrations, they weren't going to just trot out some, some infant dressed as Jesus. So what they did was they created like this fairy, this like fairy princess or fairy queen dressed all in gold, who wore this very tall, really beautiful crown and had like a cape and everything. And she's always supposed to be really, really gorgeous. And yeah, she represented the physical embodiment of baby Christ. And yeah, I guess once that got over to the States, she became a he, and it went from Christkinder to Kris Kringle. So,
yeah, it's funny looking at the things that made it over to our country, because a lot of things survived, a lot of things didn't. So with the Christmas tree, another possible origin I saw was there was something called a tree of paradise. There were medieval plays that were put on December 24th to commemorate Name Day. Mm-hmm. This was a celebration of Adam and Eve. And the tree was decorated on stage with apples and wafers. And later it was taken into the home. It was like given to one of the participants and they would take it to their home. Later, those apples became replaced with round objects that were usually metallic in nature. And so that kind of turned into our ornaments. And then
it's all making sense. It's all making sense now.
Yeah. Yeah. So by the mid 19th century, Americans had found the Christmas tree fad to be kind of an oddity. It hadn't really caught on in the mid-1800s. In the 1830s, German settlers started coming over to Pennsylvania, and they brought that. It was the Christmas tree was very strong in the German heritage, and so they brought that with them over to America. Mm-hmm. But it was still, it still wasn't really catching on. New England Puritans, this kind of goes along with something you had mentioned earlier. New England Puritans tried very hard to stamp out any type of evil pagan traditions. Like, this is funny, the things that they would try to get rid of. caroling was at the top of their list. Christmas trees and any other joyful expression was deemed to be a pagan mockery of Christmas.
You know, I'm right there with them, especially on the stance of caroling. This was New Englanders.
Yeah.
That's the one thing we see eye to eye on.
There you go.
stupid carolers.
In 1846, Queen Victoria and her German prince named Albert, they were sketched in the London News standing with their kids around a Christmas tree. And Queen Victoria was so popular that it became a favorable thing, and it started to spread throughout London, and then it spread over to America and the colonies, and it was all of a sudden kind of cool because Queen Victoria was doing it. She was so likable that she made it be a trend. And by the 1890s, Americans were really starting to catch on with this whole Christmas tree thing. One funny thing, though, in Europe, Christmas trees were generally about 3 or 4 feet tall, but not in America. In America, they reached the goddamn ceiling.
Right, because here in America, we like to take up space, right?
Even back then, even when there was a whole country to take over, they were still, all the trees were as big as the buildings back then. So that's one of the funny little differences between the European Christmas trees and the American Christmas trees, is that they just became massive over here.
Yeah, that's the American way.
That's right. And then making homemade ornaments also became very popular. In Europe, they were still using apples and nuts and berries to decorate their tree. But we did away with that, and we started just making our own.
Well, you know, the idea of St. Nicholas, you know, once it was, because Christmas was already pretty popular, right, here in the States. But the idea of St. Nicholas wasn't really a thing until, what's his name, Clement Moore wrote a really famous poem in 1822, and it was such a famous poem. I mean, like, it was he wrote it, and then he sent it to like kind of a unknown magazine at the time, and then it just like caught on, and it was said to be the one poem that children were eager to learn, like without even having to be asked. And you probably know it. You probably don't know all of it. If you do, I'd be super impressed. But it starts with, "'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, and blah-bitty-blah-bitty-blah," which I believe is exactly how it goes. But yeah, he wrote that poem, and that is one of the first literary things that went out that included the mentioning of St. Nicholas. And then it was after that that everyone was like, "Ooh, St. Nicholas, who's this guy?" And yeah.
Who's that? What's his name? Who is that guy?
Because like around that time, you know, once they had other depictions of St. Nick, once he started to pop up in more things, he was always depicted as an elf. Because even in that poem, they mentioned something along the lines of like a small man and 8 tiny reindeer.
Yeah, he was traditionally an elf. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So he was always depicted small. And then the Santa Claus suit was originally just a brown mess, right? Like it was just this furry brown number that he wore. And then because of a printing problem, the brown ink turned, it looked more red than brown. And so that's where we get the traditional Santa Claus red. It had there's like really no symbolism or anything behind it. If anyone's looking for symbolism in the red, like, I don't know, red means capitalism, red means consume, red means the devil. No, it was just a printing problem.
The blood of Christ.
Yep, no, it was just a printing problem.
Oh, that's that. I like that even more, that it was an accident.
Yeah, yeah, so there you have it. But I think I interrupted you. What were you saying?
Sorry. Oh, I don't think so. I think we're all caught up.
But I mean, I think this idea of like a massive, jolly, big belly dude, I think that is thanks to our good buddies Coca-Cola back in the early 20th century, maybe late 1900s. I mean, late 1800s, excuse me. I think maybe.
Yeah. I think a lot of the things that we think of now as far as Christmas symbolism is or at least the commercial side of it comes from like advertising.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense that it would be part of that. Another aspect of Christmas that I would like to talk about, you know, Christmas is a time of lights and festivity. One thing that we should always remember is to just take the time to stop, look up, and admire all those lights. And you know what? That's what the people of Midland, Texas did on December 24th, 2013. And they were rewarded with a showing of lights in the sky from several UFOs. All night long, Midland, Texas saw on Christmas Eve 2013 UFOs dancing across the sky. And this isn't the first time, and it wasn't the last. Midland, Texas is really like a hotbed for UFO activity.
That's got to be like their one cool claim to fame, right?
Oh, they got football.
Oh, well, I stand corrected. Also, that is not how I saw that story ending. I did not suspect UFOs at all. I thought you were going to say they looked up and they saw reindeer and a sled flying by. No, aliens, that's just as cool, if not cooler.
Yeah, aliens are as closely related to Christmas as, technically... Santa and his sleigh and his reindeer are UFOs. They're unidentified flying objects to the untrained eye.
Well, you got us there.
Probably the most famous UFO case, certainly for Europe, was something called the Rendlesham Forest Incident on December 25th and 26th of 1980 in Suffolk, England. There's a U.S. Air Force base. This event was called, it's often called Britain's Roswell.
Ooh, that's cool.
Yeah, on 3 a.m., at 3 a.m. on the night of Christmas, 1980, a security patrol near the east gate of this Air Force base, they saw lights descending into the tree line. A couple of sergeants went to go check it out. They thought it might be a downed aircraft or someone parachuting. But they saw a glowing metallic object in a clearing in the forest, surrounded by lights. It moved throughout the trees. Animals on a nearby farm were going nuts. They were just going crazy. They later returned the next day to the clearing, and they saw triangle-shaped impressions on the ground. They saw scorch marks on the ground and in the trees, a bunch of broken branches. There was a formal investigation, but the only thing they would say, the investigators determined it was animal tracks out in the forest. Mm-hmm. And they also determined that there was falling debris from space that had caught fire on reentry into the atmosphere. And so it was declared just normal events, but it goes down, much like Roswell, as... the most infamous UFO incident. And this happened on a cold Christmas night in 1980.
That's amazing. Hey, have you ever seen any of the footage of like modern footage of those skydivers that are dressed up as Santa and they'll come in to, parachute into like a festival. And it's supposed to be really cool and sweet for the kids. Have you ever seen one? I can't remember. I wish I could find it. But there's one of a Santa Claus who landed wrong and broke both of his legs and was just like screaming.
No, I have not seen that.
Well, it's a delight. Mostly.
Oh, okay.
Well, for me as a viewer, for those children who are scarred, I feel bad. But yeah, it's hilarious.
Okay.
It's hilarious.
Interesting.
Okay, so we've talked plenty about Santa.
Yeah.
But What can you tell me about any kind of like, I think they're known as anti-Santas.
Anti-Santas? You mean Hanukkah Harry?
That's one of them. But specifically like Krampus or, I think I'm pronouncing it this right. Gryla? G-R-Y-L-A? Do you know this one?
You know what? Let's take a trip around the world and let's talk about some traditions and some creatures or symbols of Christmas.
Let's do it.
Because, you know, here in America, we have our Rudolph and our Frosty and our Santa Claus and everything's nice and friendly. But that is not the case around the world. I'm going to take us first to Norway. Let's hop in the sleigh. Let's head on over to Norway. I mean, it's practically the North Pole. fun fact, I did a DNA test and found that I had like 1% Scandinavian. So I think I can show my way around there. I could show you around.
Sure.
All right.
Did you really do a DNA test?
I did, yeah.
How do you feel about them storing your DNA and then like maybe cloning
it? I welcome it. What am I going to do with it?
Yeah.
They'll make better use of it than I will.
That's true.
All right. So Norway, Christmas Eve. All the little kiddies gather around and they hear stories of the local witches that will come around on Christmas Eve and steal brooms and mops. Some people, some locals, even fire guns into the air to ward off any witches that might be coming around to scare or steal from them. But witches are a common symbol in Norway around Christmas time. I found that
that's amazing. That's awesome.
Yeah. And they're not the only ones. Italy also has an even more elaborate story. So this actually goes back to the birth of Jesus. In Italy, there is a forgotten part of the Christmas story that they still celebrate. It's said that the three wise men encountered a witch on their way to see the birth of Christ. The witch asked, "What are you doing?" And they said, "We're on our way to witness the Savior." And she was like, "I'm not interested." Because they asked, "Do you want to go with us?" And she said, "I'm not interested."
She's got the right idea.
Even back then, FOMO was a real thing. She had some fear of missing out because once she found out that it was Jesus and he was a big deal, she regretted it so much. And so to make up for it, she began riding around on a donkey, leaving presents for little children. It's called La Bafana, and she is sometimes portrayed as riding on a donkey, sometimes portrayed as riding on a broom. But it is said that this is the origin of giving coal to bad kids.
Okay.
And so, yeah, she's a kind witch, unlike the evil ones in Norway. But this Italian witch rides around giving gifts and coal to little kids.
Okay, cool. I'm into that.
Yeah.
I like that.
What do you got?
Well, let's see here. I've got, really, I just have Gryla, who is an ogress, and she also has 13 Icelandic trolls with her that all have, like, their own names and personalities. We're not going to get into it. You can Google it. But Gryla, again, she leaves the gift-giving and to St. Nick or Santa Claus, and she punishes the bad kids. There's really nothing beyond that. Other than she punishes bad kids, and she even has a cat that that partakes in the punishment.
Oh, kind of like Gargamel and his cat.
Yeah, I wish I could tell you what country that's from. Icelandic, Iceland. That's a country.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, let's hop on over to Greece. In Greece, they have a part of their Christmas celebration: goblins.
Ooh.
So they have hairy bodies, horse-like legs, monkey arms, red eyes, and iron shoes on their cloven hooves. It is said that these little goblins play pranks. In extreme cases, even kidnap and kill. That's quite a range. And the only thing to do to keep them away is to burn shoes. They hate that smell, and so they will stay away from your Christmas celebration.
That is very specific.
Mm-hmm.
You have to burn a shoe to keep the goblins away. I would like for you to burn a shoe on Christmas to keep the goblins away, and then try to explain that to the fire department when they show up. And say, no, it's a Christmas tradition, don't you know? And then your Christmas story begins.
There you go.
Should we talk about Black Pete?
Yeah, I was just going to say, let's go over to the Netherlands.
Yes, let's talk about Black Peter. Go for it.
So Santa has a helper in the Netherlands. He amuses children, he passes out gifts and candy and sometimes coal. His name is Black Peter. The portrayal of Black Peter has changed throughout the years, I read. Traditionally, it was kind of a more racist depiction. In recent years, they have updated it to not be as racist of a caricature.
Yeah, I was going to say, we typically leave Black Peter in the Netherlands because he is not welcome here in America.
Well, so he occasionally brings back bad children and sells them into the slave market.
Yeah.
So that's quite a threat. I mean, like, my family kind of threatens my nephews with, like, I'm going to call Elf on the Shelf, or I'm going to tell Elf on the Shelf, you know, to go tell Santa Claus that, you know, you haven't been good. In the Netherlands, they're like, we're going to sell you into slavery to Black Peter. That's pretty extreme.
That's a pretty extreme threat. Wait a second. I want to take a step back. Is that the purpose of Elf on a Shelf? He's supposed to watch children and report back?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
See,
yeah.
I had no idea. I mean, I knew that Elf on a Shelf was like a more recent thing, but not having or wanting any children, I didn't know what the whole purpose of it was. I thought it was just like another, you know, like a gimmick, you know, like another thing to sell people. But I didn't know.
Oh, it is certainly not a gimmick. This is a legit thing.
Does it come with like a nanny cam?
He comes with a book that tells you a story. You give him a name. You position him in the house. I think it's. I mean, hey, tell that to the creator. He's rolling in dough.
You mean Jesus, right? The creator.
Yes.
Elf on a Shelf. Yeah, I had no idea it was a. It was a thing beyond. You know, a little trinket you sell at Christmas time. That's interesting. See, when you don't have children, you don't really follow along with certain trends.
Yeah, it's pretty hot these days. Let's see. So let's go over to Spain. Mm-hmm. In Spain, they have something called a Christmas log. This is a hollow log with little stick legs that you put on, and then you put on a little smile and a little red hat on him. And from December 8th through December 24th, kids feed him, treats and candy. They give him water. They give him a blanket. And they treat him like a little part of the family. But on Christmas Eve, kids grab a stick and they beat the shit out of him. And they sing a song with the lyrics, "Poop log, if you don't..."
Can you get through it?
If you don't poop, we'll beat you with a stick. Poop log.
That is...
I can't even make this up. Candy eventually falls out, and he is therefore deemed useless and is thrown in the fire.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense, right? If I beat you and candy doesn't fall out, you are most certainly being thrown into the fire. This is absolutely insane. Where is this at?
In Spain,
okay.
You've heard of Elf on a Shelf. Now, welcome to Poop Log.
So, is this so gross? Is this like a log of poop, or is it an actual log made of wood?
You're disgusting. This is just a log of wood.
It is a log.
He's
of
pooping
wood.
Out the candy.
Okay. How?
It's like a piñata, but he's a log.
Okay. Okay. Okay, but how, I think you might have broken me. How does this log in like legend?
It's a hollowed out log. So they take a log, they hollow out the middle.
Okay.
Kids put candy and stuff in it, and then I guess they cover it with like a little face. So it's essentially a piñata, but it's
made of wood.
A log instead of a piñata, and they beat it until the candy falls out.
I appreciate that authentic pronunciation.
Yeah, thank you, thank you. It's this is a complicated.
I know this is like a really simple idea, but I'm having such trouble grasping the idea behind it.
He poops out the candy, the kids eat it, then they throw him in the fire.
Okay, all right. Jesus.
Let's head over to Sweden. They have something called a Yule goat. Since 1966.
Okay.
Uh-huh. They build, kind of like Burning Man, they build this giant goat. It's 13 meters tall, however tall that is in American. they assemble it in like the town squares. And this particular one, I forget what city it is, but this main one is assembled in the town square. It's become a tradition. However, since 1966, with this inception, it has unfortunately also had a tradition of being burned by some clever pranksters. So the goat has been burned. It's gone down in flames 29 times since 1966. Man. That's not good percentage. That's yeah, that's pretty rough. Like, these people are just trying to have fun, just trying to enjoy their little goat, their Yule goat, and these guys just keep on burning it.
I think we're missing out. We, as Americans, are missing out on the tradition of setting shit on fire for Christmas. I mean, between burning a log that poops candy, burning shoes to keep goblins away, and then burning a goat.
When you put it that way, yeah, yeah.
I mean, are we making up for that with 4th of July? Is that what we're doing?
Oh, I think we are, yeah. I think we are.
All right, well, better late than never, I suppose. As long as I get to set something on fire.
There you go. You know, something that always... I've been driving around listening to a lot of Christmas music, and everywhere I go, there's great Christmas music. I love Christmas music. Something I noticed very recently was in that song, it's the most wonderful time of the year. Mm-hmm. There's a line in there that I always found so odd. There'll be scary ghost stories and tales of old glory of Christmases long, long ago. I always thought that was such an odd line until I researched it. Mm-hmm. Apparently, ghost stories are a big part of Christmas tradition. Not now, but if you think back to like A Christmas Carol, that is one big ghost story. And apparently before that, it was very traditional to tell ghost stories. I did a little bit of digging on that. And apparently the end of the year has traditionally been, you know, it's a darker time seasonally. You mentioned that at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
It's a darker time. It's also the end of the year, and it's a time of reflection, and it's a time to think back on those we lost throughout the year, and even throughout the years, because it's such a family-related time.
Yeah.
Winter represents this death and rebirth, and so throughout the years, Christmas and the end of the year just kind of became this time to tell stories of those we lost, and also just ghost stories in general. Somewhere along the way, maybe in the last century or so, I think we've kind of lost that part of it. We kind of think of ghost stories as more of a Halloween thing, maybe with the rise of Halloween becoming bigger and bigger every decade. Mm-hmm. Christmas ghost stories just kind of lost that tradition. But I think it's something we need to bring back. I think everyone needs to watch Haunting of Hill House on Christmas. And
you could watch Scrooged. Because that's...
Scrooge is great.
Yeah, that's kind of sort of a ghost story, right?
It is a Christmas carol.
Yeah.
It's a modern Christmas carol.
Complete with ghosts.
That's a great idea. We should all watch ghost stories and tell ghost stories on Christmas. We need to bring that back.
So, okay, two things. One, I was going to say that my favorite Christmas song, the only Christmas song that I can really tolerate... there's two. There's the Carpenters. I think they did an entire Christmas album, which I love. And then the other one is Brenda Lee's Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree. Mm-hmm. I only like that one for really juvenile reasons, because it sounds like she says, later we'll have some fucking pie. But the lyric is, later we'll have some pumpkin pie.
Oh, I can't wait to hear that song now.
Yeah, yeah. So next time you hear it, it's going to sound like I'm just imagining her with like a cigarette in one hand and like real dead eyed, just saying later we'll have some fucking pie and we'll do some caroling. But no, it's pumpkin pie. And then what was the other thing I was going to say? Okay, so one of my favorite Christmas movies is actually a horror film that I recommend to everyone. It doesn't age well, but I still love it. It is Tales from the Crypt, the original British version from, I believe, yes, the 60s, that has like, I think, four or five...
1972,
okay. That has like four or five vignettes, and there's one that stars the gorgeous Joan Collins as a murderer, essentially. She kills her husband. But then it just so happens on the night that she kills her husband, there's also an escaped mental patient who is dressed like Santa or Father Christmas, since this is British. And he's coming to break into Joan Collins's house. And it's great. Yes. And I love it. And I watch it every year.
So I just discovered this a few months ago. I was on Amazon and I was like, "Ooh, Tales from the Crypt. I love that show." And then I started it and I was like, "This isn't the show." I didn't realize it was a movie previously. Yeah. And so the first story starts and she's running around her house in her tight little outfit. And I'm like, "Who is this babe? Like, who is this?" And I look her up and I was like, "Oh, whoa, Joan Collins. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. She is. Yeah.
Amazing. She's great. So it was a great story too. It like was. I was going to turn it off because it wasn't what I was expecting, but I couldn't. It was like so riveting. So yeah, that's a great recommendation for Christmas viewing.
I also recommend Silent Night, Deadly Night, the original 1982-81. It holds up pretty well, surprisingly. But yeah, Silent Night, Deadly Night.
There's a great X-Files about ghosts on Christmas Eve. They go investigate this house that is haunted by two ghosts, which are Ed Asner and Lily Tomlin.
Oh, that's cool.
They killed themselves on Christmas Eve many years ago, and they are said to have haunted this house ever since on Christmas Eve. And so Mulder and Scully go investigate. I rewatched it recently, and it's very fun. One of those fun episodes.
What did I say about X-Files? Every time you bring up X-Files, I'm going to recap an episode of I Love Lucy. But
X-Files is relevant to this show.
And so is I Love Lucy. I think it was maybe like 5 or 6 years ago that they colorized the I Love Lucy Christmas special, and they air it every year on CBS for the past 6 to 8 years. I can't remember when they started doing that. But it's actually not a very funny or good episode, so watch it at your own peril.
Watch X-Files instead, it sounds like.
Yeah, you might as well.
Yeah, so I think that's all we got for our Christmas episode. So I think, in conclusion, tell some ghost stories.
Set some things on fire.
Keep staring at the sky for some lights. And
beat a child, sell them into slavery.
Yeah. Beat your poop log and mm-hmm. watch out for witches. So I hope everyone has a wonderful Christmas or holiday season. I hope everyone has a wonderful new year. And the only thing left to say is keep it spooky.
And keep it weird.
Bye.